to another episode of Cosmos with Cosmos. I'm Liz. And Brandon is on assignment.
Is he?
Well, he's heading home. Yeah, he's in. He's still. He's in travels. He had family time. Exactly. Yeah. He had family time. So he's, you know, getting to live his life and recuperate from everything that he's been through.
Chat. He always shows up in chat.
He's flying. Well, I don't know. Whatever. He can do whatever he wants. So maybe Brandon will make a chat appearance. It'll be the ghost of Brandon via chat. That's how ghosts should communicate, is through internet chats. Maybe all like the online trolls are all ghosts that are just pissed off because they're dead. I don't know. Anyway, since this is a High in the Sky for April 2024 episode, we'll check out what's up in the night sky for April and some astronomy news. And then either stick around if you're with us live or come back later to YouTube and check out The Hangover, because we are going to go through the Messier Marathon. And if you want to know what that is, then you'll have to have to check it out. But speaking of drinks, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking, and you'll see why the name is what it is. Tired of Tired Light. Just tired of it. We'll find out why later on. But it has there's you can either use gold rum, which is what is in here, or Jamaican rum, either way. So it has gold rum, cranberry juice, lime juice. It has also a little simple syrup in it, and grenadine to kind of pull out that red a little bit more. So I feel like I'm leaving something else out, but whatever.
Well, you're the mixologist, and it's the family. I am drinking what I'm calling a total eclipse of the liver. Really, it's a grown-up lemonade. It is lemonade. Take it away, sir.
Lemonade. A bit of simple syrup. Not entirely sure why, but I guess take a little edge off. But it's got dark sweet cherries, lemonade, cherry vodka, and a little simple syrup poured over ice.
It's very refreshing now that we're heading into springtime, although it kind of doesn't feel like springtime, but you know, because it's been a little cold and rainy.
It got a little chilly, but
it's yummy. Jack's got no drink today. He's making spinach and mushroom and cheese ravioli, and the pasta dough is currently of course you're making your own dough, Jack. I expect nothing less from Jack. That sounds delicious. I would drink it or eat it.
Well,
put it in a blender, I will drink it. Or I'll just eat it.
I know.
It's so good.
Made dough before.
I've never made my own pasta dough. I made pizza dough.
Oh, I was thinking, I went right to pizza dough.
No, pasta dough.
Oh,
that's a whole other level of that anyway. If you enjoy our shenanigans, follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else, like on Spotify, YouTube, and the where are we? I don't know. Wherever else we do it. Instagram, we do our things. Follow us and rate us. Yes. Check out The Hangover only on YouTube, which is our little kind of after the show part where we're just drunk and ramble on, which is not really no different from the main show. And then of course every other Wednesday, check out The Shot. Little shots of astronomy science down your gullet for you. Little short form pieces if you're not into, don't have the time for the lengthy banter that we
The main show though is a little more organized. That's because we haven't gotten through all of our drinks. That's and so it's a little more organized than the Hangover, but
that's why The Hangover is the hint, because it's like, here's what happens after the drinks start hitting us.
It's the after party. Just a sandwich early in the morning.
I had some pizza, and then I had cereal and then pizza. Anyway, we do, of course, have some rules. If any dogs start barking, take a drink. And if we get nerdy and make any Lord of the Rings or Star Wars references, take a drink. I also forgot to mention, follow some of our friends. We got Katie and her awesome art, Wild Ixia, Wild IXIA on Etsy. We got, if you're down in the Council Bluffs, Iowa area, check out Jack's Planetarium, the Rolling Bluffs Planetarium. MrProctorShow.com, and then Ron Proctor, MrProctorShow.com. Check out just the things that he does for his community, and he's doing some great stuff now down in Tucson at Kitt Speaker Observatory in the Tucson, yeah. Tucson of Arizona. Anyway, let's get the show on the road. Let's get high. In the sky. I'm going to do it every time. Every show. I'm going to say it like that. And notice none of us are actually getting high in the sky. But if you choose to get high and it's legal and cool, and we'll get in trouble. Oregon. And you're of legal age or whatever. All right. Jesus. You got to let me just do my little thing. Of course, we start off the high in the sky with a constellation highlight. And this month, we are highlighting the classic Leo the Lion. This is a springtime constellation that is beginning to make its presence up in the night sky. Of course, it'll be as we get deeper into spring, it'll be more visible earlier in the evening hours. But what you want to look for, Leo, it's a bright constellation. It's really pretty easy to spot. You just got to look for a backwards question mark in the sky. It's a very obvious backwards question mark. So if you're looking up there and you go, huh, that looks like a backwards question mark, then you're most likely seeing Leo.
But if you're still unsure, look for the triangle.
Yes, there's like a elongated triangle behind it of stars. That's the body of Leo the Lion. Now, this backwards question mark, that is the head and chest of Leo the Lion. It's also an asterism known as the sickle because it looks like, you know,
A sickle.
Does anybody use sickles nowadays? Do farmers still use sickles? Or just like, I don't know, like fun serial killers maybe use sickles. Okay. The brightest star in Leo is the bottom star in that question mark called Regulus, which is the heart of Leo the Lion. It means regal. Royal star. It's a binary star.
Can you split it?
No, I don't think so. And the second brightest star is Denebola, and Denebola is the tail of Leo the Lion. So it's on the opposite side. It's at the end of that kind of triangle that makes its body. And either one of those stars can be part of the springtime asterism, the spring triangle, which we discussed in our March High in the Sky episode. So if you want to know about the spring triangle, then check out the March High in the Sky. But we got Leo the Lion up there with Regulus and Denebola standing out. And we know Leo is a lion. And actually, Leo has been seen as a lion basically forever.
Well, it looks like a lion.
Because it looks like it's obviously like a lion.
It's like the Sphinx of Egypt.
It's one of the earliest recognized constellations. And archaeological evidence suggests that the Mesopotamians had basically a similar constellation around 4000 BCE. And some mythologists believe that in Sumeria, Leo represented the monster Humbaba, who was killed by Gilgamesh.
Oh, some who-ologists?
Mythologists, people who study the myths, ancient myths. The mixologists. They like to weigh in on the constellations. So again, most cultures recognize Leo as a lion. In Babylonian astronomy, the constellation was called Ur-Gula, the great lion. The brightest star, Regulus, was known as the star that stands at the lion's breast. Distinctly regal associations, a la the King Star. To the Greeks, which of course, you know, Greeks are very popular in night sky with us, they recognize Leo as the Nemean lion, which was the lion that Hercules fought as one of his 12 labors that he had to perform. And this lion had a very tough fur that no weapon could penetrate it. And so being Hercules, he used his strength to like strangle the lion. And apparently what I was reading, he also like broke its leg backwards and like bent it in half, the whole lion in half. I don't know. It was pretty gruesome, but to basically, I guess, celebrate or honor Leo and this and Hercules completing this labor of defeating Leo, Leo was placed into the stars.
He also skinned him.
Yes, and the
by using the claw.
Only Leo's own claw could penetrate his own hide, and then that his hide became what, like a was it the shield for Orion or? But didn't somebody else get the hide? Yeah,
Hercules.
Wore for a bit. He's like, "Oh, my new lion cape, everybody!" In the height of Greek fashion, right there. Now the Chinese are a little different. They look at the night sky and they go crazy with everything that's in. They have so many asterisms and so many. It's wild. So the modern constellation of Leo lies across one of the quadrants symbolized by the vermilion bird of the south. I'm not even going to attempt to do the Chinese name of it, because I don't want to offend anyone. By the vermilion bird of the south, and three enclosures divide the sky, in Chinese. So, the name of the Western constellation in modern Chinese is Shizizuo. I apologize. Which basically means the lion constellation. And there's 12 asterisms in this, like, whole breakout, each, like, involving, like, different stars and repeat stars and whatever. Like, you have, like, the right wall is a collection of stars, or the banner of a wine shop is part of it. So,
we have over 200.
Yeah, it's wild. Oh, yeah, you had to make all of those anyway. Of course, you know, these constellations, these are all made up of stars at varying distances from the Earth. They're not all just, like, really hanging out together, unless they are hanging out together, like a binary star, like Regulus, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of deep space objects in Leo. In fact, there's a lot of bright galaxies in Leo the Lion. It has what's known as the Leo triplet, a triplet of spiral galaxies known as the M66 group, or Messier, Charles Messier's artist catalog, which, yes, in The Hangover, check it out, we'll go through the Messier marathon. But it's a small group of galaxies. It's about 37 million light years away. And the spiral galaxies are M65, M66, and NGC 3628. NGC refers to the new general catalog, so it's separate from Messier's catalog. And M66 is actually distorted due to the gravitational interactions with the other galaxies, and those galaxies are actually, like, pulling stars away from M66. Which is kind of cool, but you need large binoculars or a small telescope too. So, in fact, most deep space objects, you're going to need either binoculars or a small telescope, or even, like, you know, a large telescope or an amateur, like, a, you know, you've invested $2,000 in a telescope kind of thing. Leo also has M95 and M96. These are both spiral galaxies that are 20 million light years away from Earth. And it's also home to one of the largest structures in the observable universe. Some of the structures found in this constellation are the Clos Campusano and the huge LQG, which are basically, these are large quasar groups.
Yeah.
And quasars are known as quasi-stellar objects. They're essentially like really old galaxies that are emitting a lot of radio.
Right. So that's how they first saw them, was in the radio.
Yeah.
That they, they kind of look like stars. Because
quasi-stellar.
But what you're looking at is kind of the heart of that galaxy, and it's very active galaxy, the black holes feeding on stuff. And so early universe and quasars. Discovered in the 60s, I believe.
It just sounds cool, quasars. It sounds very science fiction, which is great. So that's Leo and some stuff that's in Leo for the spring. Of course, there's many other constellations and stuff to find out there. And we always recommend, you know, getting one of those apps, sky map apps that on your phone that you can just point up in the sky and be able to, you know what you're looking at, or find various things like, you know, comets and deep space objects, etc. And also Planets. Of course, we like to have some planets up in our night sky. And really, in April, it's primarily affectionately known as Jupy Jupes on this show to us. But Jupiter is the main planet that you're going to see in April. I'm sorry, I have something in my eye, and it's just driving me absolutely bonkers. It's probably a piece of stupid makeup that I only put on for these damn shows. It could be also dog hair everywhere. But Jupiter's the main one that you're going to be able to see at night. It's very bright. It stands out quite often. Currently, it's about, we'll say, at around 8:30 in the evening. I've seen it almost pretty directly overhead when I've looked up kind of to the south and heading to the west.
Oh, really?
At home. Yeah, it kind of goes over the house just a little bit, but I mean, it's heading in the western direction. But
okay. Maybe. Yeah, time.
Maybe. I mean, it's not directly overhead, but it's kind of, you know, it's
gotcha.
I gotta look up to see it. But going through the month, on April 6th, the crescent moon is going to be hanging out low on the eastern horizon with Saturn and Mars in the early morning sky. And on April 7th, the moon is then going to be visiting Venus early in the morning. You do need to clear horizon, so if you got a lot of mountains on your horizon or buildings, yeah, it's going to be pretty low, then you're not going to be able to see it. Yeah, and these are basically about like 30 minutes before sunset when I'm talking about early morning sky, so mm-hmm. like, or sunrise, I should say, sunset.
Venus is heading more towards morning sky, higher in the morning sky.
I think it's not.
So it's diving towards
the sun. I think it's diving towards the sun, yeah. On April 10th, Saturn and Mars have a breakfast date about 30 minutes before sunrise. And on April 20th, Jupes and Uranus.
You definitely need.
Yeah, you need binoculars to see Uranus. With binoculars, it'll look like kind of a small greenish star. And they will actually only be, Jupiter and Uranus on the 20th will be half a degree apart in the sky. So
if you find Jupiter, you can find Uranus.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I know there's a joke in there somewhere. Now, April. April 2024, everybody. There's some events. In fact, there's one event. There's one main event happening in April of 2024. Nothing. I don't know if you've heard about this. I don't know if you've seen it on the news. You know what? Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, man.
That would be. So on April 8th, why didn't I? Oh, I do have the date in there. On April 8th, Holy Armageddon, Batman. It's a total solar eclipse. Cheers.
Okay. Have you seen the like headlines that say basically the world's going to end with this?
Yeah, like, well, I've seen some sensationalist headlines that's like, Texas calls in the National Guard, or Ohio calling in the National Guard, or...
They just do that in general.
Well, I mean, so basically, there's going to be a total solar eclipse on April 8th, and this is when, essentially, it's a new moon, and so the moon is going to, the Earth and the moon and the sun, and they line up very nicely. Happens every now and then. Typically, the moon's tilted off the plane of the solar system, so occasionally they line up, and so the moon's going to pass in front of the sun and block it out, and we all die. No, it's an amazingly awesome, beautiful, crazy sight. Something we've said it many times on the show. We wholeheartedly recommend seeing a total solar eclipse in person. It's
closest to a religious experience that I can get.
It's mind-boggling. In fact, everything goes like twilight. Like the birds get quiet, and it's absolutely beautiful.
You really feel connected to the
Jack says Podunk states are freaking out about actually getting tourists. Yeah. A lot of states aren't prepared for like the amount of people that are gonna kind of show up. But it goes through Mexico, through Texas, throughout the Midwest, and then leaves the U.S. through Maine. Yeah. So it takes this sort of.
I don't think Jack, I don't think Jack gets a fool.
Jack, you don't
yeah, get I a think fool. Yeah, I think the line goes like goes from Texas up towards Ohio.
And yeah, and then out
cuts over out, towards Maine.
Out through Maine. In Texas, totality in Dallas, I should say, totality begins at 1:40 p.m. Central Time, and then the max eclipse is at 1:42 Central Time, and then it ends at 1:44. Central Time, so it's basically a four minute long thing.
It's a, but that's just a totality, which you're not going to get long totalities anyway.
Yeah.
But that is it's 4 minutes of just being connected to the universe. We need to look at because there's no totality here. We should look up and see how much of a moon carve out we get of the sun for
Oregon. Yeah, I don't think we get a lot. Jack says he's only at 80% at home, so he's going to do a road trip.
Well, I have to tell you, the difference between 99% and 100% is basically, it's like being across the
universe. Is it astronomical?
It is astronomical. It is, you might as well be across the universe from it.
Yeah. But if you're hoping to get any kind of like a hotel room or anything, you're going to be like, look, everything's been booked up for like years now, essentially. Campsites, everything's super expensive. But definitely cool. It'll end, it ends in Maine at about 3:34 p.m. Eastern time. But what's cool, what I was reading, is that because the sun is at solar maximum and it's kind of peaking at solar maximum, then during the eclipse, you could see prominences, these kind of like arcs of plasma off the surface, I say lightly, of the sun. And there could even be a coronal mass ejection.
Which we always hope for.
When it's not pointed, when it's not pointed towards the Earth, we hope for. But that would be a really cool to see during the eclipse as a CME.
But to be fair, though, if you do see a CME, it's on the edges, which means it's not going to be.
Yeah. But you could see, basically, you could witness a little explosion off of the sun. A little fart that is like how many nuclear bombs?
A lot.
A lot. It's a very powerful fart. Like lots of beans. Lots of beans. So that's the biggest event in April, of course. It is
not for me.
I mean, it is rare that solar eclipse happen.
Yeah, it's like once or twice a year, but
being able to see like
where you are,
yeah, where to have it happen where you're located is rare. A lot of times it happens over the ocean,
right, or Antarctica.
Yeah,
the poles actually. The poles get it the most, just because, the moon doesn't always line up directly with the Earth. It's either going to be a little above or a little below. And so the poles are going to get it more often. But for the U.S., to put this in perspective, I think there was an eclipse in like 1980, 1979, somewhere around there. And then after that, for the United States, it was 2017 that the next eclipse occurred.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then now we have this one for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the next one's going to happen until the 2040s.
Yeah, I think so. Check out our shot episode on eclipses. Yeah. I think I go over them in that shot.
But an eclipse, a solar eclipse, generally happens once or twice a year, somewhere in the world, like Liz said, is basically three-fourths ocean. And so that's where most of them happen, or at the poles.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the new moon is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry.
The
full moon.
Uh-huh. The full moon. We'll get to, but okay. It's on April 23rd.
Yeah, there's, or is it in the notes? I missed that.
This one?
Oh, no. Okay, I'm sorry. The one that's coming up here really soon now? I don't know. When's the full moon in April?
April
23rd. All right, so it's the one that's kind of right now, there's an eclipse.
Oh, okay.
Because of the way that the geometry lines up, you have solar and lunar eclipses together.
I guess I should go back and look at my March High in the Sky episode.
But I'm not sure if it's visible for us in the U.S.
I don't
know.
think so.
Regardless, go out and look at the moon.
Yeah, check it out. So the solar eclipse isn't the only thing happening. As far as celestial events go, there is also the Lyrid meteor shower. And it's not an exciting meteor. It's not a bright meteor shower. It's happening April 21st through 22nd. But it's also around the time that the moon is getting full. So that the full moon does hinder the visibility of things like meteor showers. It can get, I didn't see where it said that, but often like with this one, apparently bright dust trails can be seen, for it. But the best time to see it is April 23rd, which is the full moon.
But so, also for midnight.
And this, the Lyrids come from comet C1861 G1 Thatcher. It has a 415-year orbit around the sun. And this is actually the oldest meteor shower that we can still see. It was first recorded in 6,687 BCE, which is wild. So I thought that was really cool, even though... Okay, so it's...
Yeah, but, you know... Yeah, but competing with the full moon though, you're going to need to be in a very dark location. Though it does say, this is EarthSky, .org, they do say that it is prone to uncommon surges, which will get you up to about 100 per hour.
Wow.
But
I think I read indicated that it was expecting a surge.
Well, I mean... Probably not, but, you know, but you are competing with a full moon, like you said, and so.
Yeah. Speaking of that full moon, April 23rd, and it is known as the Pink Moon.
Motherfucker, I should have made, there's a drink called the Pink Goose, but, and it's got watermelon vodka, and I want to say cranberry or something like that.
The Pink Moon?
Yeah.
Yeah, meteor showers. Anytime there was something weird happening in the sky, ancient people were like, oh shit, we're doomed. The gods are mad. Oh no. Yeah. It's a bad omen. Something's gonna happen. Oh, yes. Sorry. If you're listening, sorry. We have chat going, you know. But it's called the Pink Moon, not because it turns pink, right? The moon never changes. This is a lunar eclipse. Why isn't it called a lunar eclipse? A lunar eclipse, where it will turn red, but that's due to our atmosphere. Like, the moon itself isn't actually turning red.
This is when you're doing an astronomy show that's like a burlesque show, where it's like
eclipse.
Lunar eclipse, Orion's baby maker, the big dicker.
Yeah. An astronomy night sky burlesque show?
A trademark, whatever the legal. We did it.
Anyway, it's called the Pink Moon because... I had a hair on it. It marks appearance of moss pink or like pink moss or wild ground phlox, which are the first of the spring flowers. Maybe. I guess pink moss.
Have you ever seen pink moss?
Maybe. I don't know. We live in a more mossy place, so maybe we'll see some pink moss now, which is cool. But last but not least of the events, April 22nd, so go back a day from from the eclipse, or from the, what we're talking about, full moon. It's Earth Day! So we can celebrate the Earth on April 22nd. Now, something cool you can see is, okay, if you look at the sunset in the west, and then you turn around to the east...
Okay.
You'll see a band of pink or orange with a bluish band underneath, and that band will move upwards following the sunset to form an arch that then eventually fades as night settles in. I'm going to get to it. It's in the notes. That's why I'm talking about it. There's a dark blue band, the dark blue part, that is Earth's shadow rising, and this is known as the Belt of Venus. No relation to the planet Venus, but related to Venus, the goddess, or Aphrodite, the girdle, like her bone, I guess. I don't know, but that's what I can find. Is that it's really says named of like for the girdle of Aphrodite. So that's a fun little effect of sunset.
Then. This obviously what I'm about to say is not for everybody because we live in a particular place where to our east we can see mountains. In fact, we see the Lonely Mountain. I don't know if we need to take a drink, but take a drink. But it is a mountain that we call the Lonely Mountain only because it is by itself in this window of trees that we can see. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy seeing her shadow on those mountains where you can see as it, you know, literally as time is going by, you can actually watch the earth shadow go up. But it's really cool. Mm-hmm. That sandwich has not helped.
There's always some pizza you can go to.
But I did have some of those little eggs in mom's
garden. Yeah, because that's really going to do
it. Those little chocolate eggs.
Okay. just a common sense note out there, always drink responsibly. And, you know, pad your stomach with some carbs before you imbibe in the liquor. Yeah. Anyway, like I did with pizza. Like some ravioli, some homemade ravioli.
I said handmade. Oh, okay.
Homemade is also handmade.
Right. But it felt like I shouldn't have said handmade.
It's the hand homemade's tale. Anyway, Space News.
Is this the first one? Is my drink the first one? We have to get like.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you. You marinate. You marinate.
Well, you gotta let me do my thing. Isn't that what you said?
Space.com. Shiva and Shakti, the ancient star streams that helped weave the Milky Way. So, here's what's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
The Gaia Space Telescope tracks the movements of billions of stars in the galaxy. And what astronomers have found with this is they found two ancient streams of stars that have seemed to have like woven together over 12 billion years ago. 12 billion years ago.
That's universe.
2 billion years after the
BB. Not even.
It's less than 2 billion.
But we'll get into that a little bit more later.
So they're so old that they likely formed before the spiral arms of the Milky Way galaxy. They're named after the two Hindu gods that created the universe, Shiva and Shakti, according to the Hindu religion. And they're basically like the foundation of our galaxy. They're like proto-galactic fragments is what they're called, which is just cool. Proto-galactic fragments. That's a good drink name, maybe.
That's a good one.
Drink name. So or
a good punk band name. Which with all the punks be like, what the fuck?
They're close to the center of the Milky Way with similar orbital trajectories, and each stream contains a mass of around 10 million suns.
Okay.
And they're thought to be between 12 and 13 billion years old, and they're metal poor. So this indicate metal poor.
Well, hold on. No, 13 to 14?
12 to 13.
Oh, 12.
They're metal poor. So this indicates that they had formed before a lot of the heavy elements had been seeded in the universe from supernovae exploding.
Right. So in astronomy, anything that is any atomic thing that is greater than helium is considered a metal.
So you're
lithium is big bang.
Iron.
All of that stuff that you need a star to go through its life to actually create. So hydrogen, when we say that it is metal poor.
Yeah, it's primarily hydrogen and helium.
Hydrogen and helium, so you're talking very old.
Yes.
Very, very, very old.
Yeah.
Primordial.
Well, and these are. They're very old stars that were around helping form our galaxy. Yeah, which is cool. So that's just some new observations from the Gaia-based telescope. In other news from Science Daily, new research suggests, oh God, this might be hard for you, there's no dark matter. What? Or dark energy for that matter.
Yeah, right?
This study comes from the University of Ottawa. By Rajendra P. Gupta is the primary on this study. And basically is saying that dark matter is anything that appears to not interact with light or the electromagnetic spectrum.
Gravity is the only thing it can
feel. Or that can only be explained through gravitational force. So Rajendra Gupta, he's a physics professor at the Faculty of Science at the University of Ottawa. He used a combination. Distinguished.
Which apparently the title you can just throw out.
Okay. He used a combination of like theories. I don't know. My brain started to kind of like, I was like, I don't have the educational levels to really go through this.
He combined two things.
Yes. He combined covariant coupling constraints and tired light theories.
Right. So the first one, the whole covariant thing basically just means that the constants of physics aren't constant. Yeah. So like the strengths of forces, strong forces, things like that, change over
time. So yeah, like the forces of nature decrease over cosmic times, and light loses energy as it travels very long distances. So he says, this is a quote from him, in standard cosmology, the accelerated expansion of the universe is said to be caused by dark energy, but is in fact due to the weakening forces of nature as it expands and not due to dark energy. And he also had a previous study basically saying that the age of the universe is actually 26.7 billion years old, and this ties into that. It allowed them to discover that the universe does not require dark matter to exist. If the universe is that old, because then you have this like decaying, the light gets tired. She gets tired.
Right.
How do you feel about this?
Okay. Well, first of all,
fancy physics man.
To be completely transparent to what Gupta, his hypothesis, you have to basically put those numbers in to get it all to work out, which is something that a lot of physicists and all that just detest. It's not it doesn't mean that Gupta necessarily is wrong, but when you have to start putting in numbers to make it work.
Okay, then it gets a little like, forcing the result.
Exactly. And there's a lot of physicists that really do not like that. Yeah. And it comes down to Occam's razor. Is there a simpler explanation to it, or do I have to really fudge stuff? And it's going to be the simpler explanation. But also, to Gupta's thing where he's saying that, constants in physics change over time, which is not a new concept. And also tired light is not new. That goes all the way back to 1928, 1929 with Mr. Fritz Wicki. And the problem is that there is absolutely no evidence for either one of those. So when we look at the universe, as far back as we can see, we don't see CMB. Any change, especially like even with the Earth, looking back billions of years where we have actual like rock data, there is no change in, strengths of, or there's no change in values of what are considered physical constants of the universe. And so there's no proof of it Also, Tired Light makes predictions that even Zwicky was like, it doesn't seem right. So Tired Light historically has been used to validate the steady state universe, mm-hmm. and they have tried to use it in the past to say the Big Bang never happened. So there's also absolutely no proof for Tired Light, which means my drink, I'm tired of Tired Light because it comes up every so often. And
every now and then it's Tired Head.
So I don't think Gupta's right, but I am,
it's need to explore.
I am so far removed from all of this that I really, my opinion doesn't matter. But at the end of the day though, it is going to, Gupta's ideas are going to force the entire rest of the astronomical and physics community to kind of re-examine, mm-hmm. you know, what they believe. And it's not a bad thing for people to come up with these ideas, even though they're incorrect, because it does, because it's so far out of the box, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that it makes the conventional people
have to look. Quantum was batshit.
Yeah.
You know, and there's always this, like, even if it is kind of, you know.
And to be honest, even with physics, so if you look at physics with the standard model of physics, you have to fudge that a little bit to make it look like the universe that we see today. And so that means the standard model at the end of the day is not correct, but it's so fucking successful, mm-hmm. In, you know, making predictions about, mm-hmm. how things work and stuff like that. So it doesn't mean that Gupta is wrong, mm-hmm. But there's a big burden of proof for him to prove it. Also, he recognizes that really he has no proof at this point.
Yeah.
And they're going to look for it.
Yeah.
So it's not, so that's the main thing. This really.
Is it just Nobel fishing? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, if it proves to be correct.
Yeah, that definitely Nobel Prize.
This is Nobel Prize because it completely upends what we have, mm-hmm. thought. But this is born out of, James Webb. Mm-hmm. And James Webb took some pictures, saw some galaxies that appeared to be more, developed than they should be, mm-hmm. at that particular age of the universe. Mm-hmm. And so this is an attempt to explain that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's right to double the age of the universe. It just seems off.
Yeah. Well.
Especially when there's so much evidence from, you know, observation. Also, with Tired Light, you should have galaxies in the early universe should be really quite fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that. We can get really sharp images with, like, James Webb, mm-hmm. and shit like that. And so even Zwicky was like 100 years ago was like, you know, that we're not seeing the fuzziness. And so, mm-hmm. this is probably not right. But, you know, go for it, Gupta. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it ends up being right, then I follow the data, mm-hmm. and if it's right, then
it's right. You know, I mean, it's always worthy to explore. I mean, this is what science is about. It's about exploring, mm-hmm. these and trying to understand the things that we don't fully understand. Even the things that we do, we don't have all the, you know, full understanding for. We don't, there are still things, like you said, you still have to fudge a little bit to get things to look how it does today. Yeah. So there's still stuff we don't know, you know, which is why dark matter and dark energy, it's like, okay, there's something there that we can't see, that we don't know what it is, but, you know, it has to account for, you know, all this extra mass in galaxies, or, you know, the acceleration of the universe, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know what dark matter and dark energy is. And so Gupta might be correct, but, you know, it just...
You gotta have the proof.
You have to have the data. And it has to be backed up by data. Yeah. And he's making an extraordinary claim. And when you make an extraordinary claim, you have to have extraordinary data. Mm-hmm.
Or a fistful of datas.
Fistful of datas. Oh, stick to that. That's not
a
great episode.
Star Trek is not a drinking rule.
It's a great episode about it. And if you're unsure about fistful of datas, it's where Worf and Alexander do the holodeck, and there's all these datas that are like cowboys. So it's a great episode.
Anyway, moving on. All right, from the I just want to also with that article, I just want to just a little thing of a little a PSA, a public service announcement, because this article I saw it just everywhere. It news head. It took like its own headlines. There's no dark matter, no dark energy. New study reveals blah blah blah, and it's like okay, it's not. It's one study in one journal basically, and so you know that then got kind of you know overblown in regular media, that it's not saying that it's accurate or anything. It's just like it was just a study.
Can I quote a true poet of you may. World history?
You may.
To quote the incredible poet Flava Flav, don't believe the hype.
Don't believe the hype.
And so, yeah, don't believe the hype. If you see a sensational headline, most likely it's not what you think it is. But if you really do have questions, then look for, you know, other sources, reputable sources, and you can always ask us. We'll tell you. Send us a message.
I was gonna wait. Let me see if I can throw this joke in here. That's what. Do you know how Putin views himself? Reputinable. And if you want more on this article, on this study, it is called Testing CCC Plus TL Cosmology with Observed Baryon Acoustic Oscillation Features in the Astrophysical Journal 2024-9641:55 DOI, and then some other numbers that are its DOI number. Anyway, there you go. Next, phys.org.
Should we put it in chat?
According to phys.org, astronomers find evidence that blue supergiant stars can be formed by the merger of two stars.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay,
that
so this was led by the Instituto de Astrofísica de Canarias, the IAC, I guess, I don't know. Athira Nenon is the lead of an international team that did computational and observational, an international team of computational and observational astrophysicists. Okay. They simulated detailed models of stellar mergers and analyzed a sample of 59 early B-type blue supergiants in the Large Magellanic Cloud. And B-type blue supergiants, these are very luminous, very hot stars, okay, very massive stars. And the current lore, the current thought of is that they would occur during a very rapid phase of evolution, but that being the case, they should be rarely seen. However, we see a lot of them. And so then it's like, well, why then? Okay. If they should be rarely seen because of this, like, just crazy fluke fast evolution, why are we seeing so many of them? So their study, basically, what we know is that most massive stars are binary pairs. Mm-hmm. They're binary systems, basically. But these blue supergiants, they're all single. They're all single stars. So they simulated mergers of evolved giant stars with smaller stellar companions over a wide range of varying parameters. And they found that stars born from such mergers have greater success in reproducing the surface composition of the blue type supergiants that we see. And so this may actually be the main way that these blue supergiants are formed, is through mergers. So they were once a binary pairs that merged together and formed a bigger star.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, if I eat another person, I'm going to get bigger.
Right. But it's also easier to make those smaller people.
That's true.
It's easier for the universe to make the smaller
stars. Smaller ones together rather than all this energy and material ones that's needed to make a bigger star.
Right. That's why you see in the universe more red dwarfs than other stars.
Mm-hmm. It takes more energy to get bigger. So the next part of their study then is to attempt to explore how these blue supergiants explode and contribute to the black hole neutron star landscape. of the universe. So their step one was, okay, make the mergers happen. Step two, what happens when they explode?
Right. So, okay. All right. Also, when they say you see a lot of these B stars, it's not like you see a lot of them. It's just that there's more of them.
Should see based on the current cosmological ideas of how things work, stars form and everything.
So it's easier to make smaller stars, but those stars generally are going to be in stable orbits, and so it's going to be rare. I can get behind this. This is
all right. This is fancy physics man approved research.
Yeah, I'm
take that, Goot.
I'm sure that these people are like, oh, well, that's a stamp of approval. Okay, I can get behind this. I like this. I need a bangle.
You do. Instead of astronomy news, this ties into astronomy events for April, is the Devil Comet.
Oh, okay.
Becometh.
Well, I read about this, yes.
Okay, so 12P Pons Brooks, which is referred to as the Devil Comet due to horn-shaped explosions of ice and gas. Explosive outbursts were viewed that came from a cryovolcano in July of 2023. So this comet has an ice volcano on its surface, I guess. And it had an explosive outburst, and it resulted in streams of gas and dust coming off of the comet, giving the impression that it has two horns, but also kind of resembles the Millennium Falcon, apparently. So I guess take a drink, because I haven't said any Star Wars thing for a long time, but that's just
thanks for going with that one, though.
The Devil Comet, the Falcon Comet, I don't know. Well, you know, comets throughout history have always been seen as Hans Comet. Comets have always been seen as bad omens and all of that. So play into it.
Can we get back to this? Has a cryovolcano? It's big enough to have a cryovolcano?
It's the size of Everest.
But big enough to have a cryovolcano.
It had an explosive outburst.
My thought would be that this would be solid through and through. And that you wouldn't... Well, yeah, but the only reason why they have tails is because...
But I guess, you know, that sublimation and the unsublimation, I forget what it's called.
But my thought is cryovolcanoes have nothing to do with sublimation.
Right. Well, look, I'm just reading what I've read online, okay? And everything you read online is correct. But this did come from...
answer for it, but...
I think I got this out of... there's various websites that have covered it. You got this one from Newsweek. Anyway, it's the size of Everest. It will reach its closest point to the sun on April 21st, which it'll appear brightest in our skies in the weeks approaching that date. So currently, basically, it's flying through the constellation of Pisces. It'll move through Aries, and then on the 21st, it will be in the constellation of Taurus. It will be best visible in the evenings from the northern hemisphere. It'll be close to the west northwest horizon, but you are going to need binoculars to see it. It's not like a bright comet like you see in all those fancy comet photos where it's like.
Well, so we have a shot.
See it, maybe. Yeah.
We have a shot.
We don't have binoculars. No. But you need binoculars to see it. It will, by June 2nd, it will fly by Earth at 144 million miles away.
144? 144 million miles. So that's basically from the sun to Mars. Away from us.
Maybe I read that wrong, but anyway.
No, I mean, it makes sense.
Okay.
It makes sense.
It's not going to get close to us.
It's not going
to
get close to us.
But anyway, so if you want to check out the Devil Comet, then now's the time to try and check it out, or at least further in April, up to April 21st is the best time.
Okay, first, all right, two comments. One's a comment, one's a question.
One's a comet?
One's a comet, and one's a question. The comment is that if you do look at it through a telescope or binoculars, it's not going to look like a devil at this point. But, you know, so just know that.
It'll be a fuzzy ice ball.
It'll be a fuzzy ice ball. But my question, completely rhetorical, is how many, like, Southern Baptists are freaking out because it's called the Devil's Comet? And they're like, oh, God, you know, save us from this.
I mean, that just goes with, I mean, devil or devil's comet, devils get a bad rap, but comets get a bad rap. So, but you know what? We always say, science be wild.
It's be wild.
Or full of devilry. Lastly, before we end this April High in the Sky episode and move on to the Hangover's Messier Marathon, we do have an in memoriam. An in memoriam. And we would like to cheers to Tom Stafford. Cheers. This is an astronaut that passed away at the age of 93 after a long illness, but also he was like 93, so lived a long, good life. He flew to space 4 times and orbited the moon as part of the Gemini and Apollo missions, Gemini 6 and 9 and Apollo 10. However, he is most known for being a peacemaker with the Soviets. He's known for the U.S.-Soviet orbital handshake in 1975, which was his last flight. Him and cosmonaut Alexei Leonov as the Apollo and Soyuz capsules rendezvoused together in their first joint mission. There's a photo of them in their, like, the airlock or whatever, the docking, and shaking hands with each other. In fact, he spent, I forget how many months, but months learning Russian in order to be able to, you know, conversate. And he was a big advocate for those peaceful relations and that all the countries, like, we really need to, like, work together.
Yeah,
for space. And this event, this event is what then kind of officially ended the space race between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. He says, in quote, "We proved that two countries with different languages, differing units of measurement, certainly vast different political systems could work together to achieve a common goal." And now there are only 8 remaining astronauts alive from the lunar program. So Ad Astra, Tom Stafford, thank you for your service.
Yeah, good. We got good dink.
Good. Some good, anyway, I'm going to try to make a Peter Dinklage joke out of that. Anyway.
We got good Dinklages.
That's our episode of Cosmos High in the Sky for April 2024. Thank you guys for joining us. Lots of exciting events happening this month. Of course, the solar eclipse. By the way, if you're not in anywhere remotely near where the solar eclipse's path is going to be, there will be streams online. You can watch it online. It's not the same as witnessing it in person, but it's still cool to see nonetheless. So you can go online. I'm sure NASA will have one. Usually, like, there's like some like slew observatory or something that usually does like a live stream of these kind of things.
When we had the annular that went right over our house and it was cloudy, NASA had, or somebody,
they always usually have a stream, so you can check those out. But also check out the Hangover with Cosmos. We will be going into that after a quick break here. But if you're not with us live now, you can check out the Hangover on our YouTube channel, Cosmos with Cosmos. Of course, follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else, Spotify. I guess there's no more Google Podcasts, but Apple Podcasts. I don't know, whatever. Whatever you want to listen to us, whatever you want to watch us, check us out. And we'll see you
in 2 weeks. Cheers, everybody.
Bye, everybody.